Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. Thank you for joining us for this conversation.
All right, here we are, Marco.
All right, chapter two of this conversation. I'm excited.
The first one, this is a bug crowd story, and we're looking at the mind. We're going inside the mind of a hacker, and we're fortunate enough to get the business view of this. What's the value to the business of bringing the research community together to target some of the tough problems and challenges that organizations face that they can't hire permanent folks to handle, right?
Yep, that's what we talked about in the first chapter. And exactly. Today, Sean, we're gonna go in the mind of a hacker, but we're actually going outside, in a way, the mind of a hacker, and see where this mind is located.
We're on the road. We're traveling the world today. Where are they from? Where do they focus? And how does that change what they do and the outcomes? And to have this conversation, we have two folks with us. I'm going to first introduce from Bug Crowd, Grant McCracken. Grant, it's good to see you again.
Hey, great to meet you. Great to speak with you guys again. Just to briefly introduce myself, name's Grant. I lead operations at Bug Crowd. That has a lot of different implications as far as, you know, we're involved in the researcher side of things. So we have our researcher growth and our researcher operations group that are in charge of researcher success as a totality in terms of like picking the right researcher, putting them on the right program, so on and so forth, as well as the security operations side of things, triaging, validating bugs, and a lot of other stuff. Won't bore you with it, but very involved with setting up and managing programs in the crowdsource world. So happy to be here, happy to be answering any questions you've got, and to be talking about the minds of hackers. And speaking of hackers, we've got Jasmine with us. He's one of our top researchers at Bug Crowd. I'll let him introduce himself as well.
Sure, thanks, Grant. So like Grant said, my name is Jasmine Landry. I am from Montreal in Canada. I've been hacking on Bug Crowd for I think close to 4 years now. I started off slow because I was just learning how to hack, and with experience and some practice, I was able to climb my way up in the rankings. And I currently work full-time in a Canadian company, an ISP company. I used to do bug bounty full-time, but decided to get back in the work industry for family issues because I had a baby back in September. So I figured that it was easier for me to get a constant revenue instead of relying on bug bounty and having to rely on companies for paying me. Because with bug bounty, we never know when we'll get paid. So I figured the risk was lower for me to like work full time and do bug bounty as a hobby. So yeah, that's me and my background on hacking on Bug Crowd.
Love it, and I'm sure we'll draw upon some more of your experience on the platform and working with others. And this is going to be partially driven by a report that you guys put out every year at Bug Crowd, Inside the Mind of a Hacker, and this is focused on where folks are from. And I know, Grant, we'll start with you. There are people from everywhere, right? But the interesting thing about this report is where they're from drives a lot of what they do, how they do it, why they do it, where they do it, who they do it for, and what their motivation is. And obviously, we encourage everybody to read the report to get all those. We're going to bring that report to life now. Let's start with where are some of the folks from. I know there's one particular region in the world that has seen significant growth and a lot of folks joining the platform.
Yeah, I guess if we're talking about where a large contingency of our researchers are located, we've seen a lot of growth in the APAC sort of area, specifically out of India and Pakistan. Those are probably some of the places where we have the most researchers up and coming. High degree of just because of the availability of work, right? All it takes is to get involved, all it takes is a couple of YouTube tutorials and an internet connection and a computer, and it doesn't even have to be a good computer to be able to start hacking. You can potentially start making money, right? And in developing countries or places where a U.S. dollar goes a little bit further, there's a lot of appeal to that. And more than that, it's also somewhat lucrative, right? We've got multiple researchers who have, you know, made more than $1 million on the platform over the course of their careers. People in these geographies are able to make a substantive amount of money. So I think that's a large piece of why we've seen that increase there. There's also, you know, just a large workforce there that's hungry. And looking for opportunities. So we've made large inroads there and have a large portion of community. But that's not to say that, you know, they're not from other places. I think 27% is from the U.S. So we still have a large centralization within the United States as well as EMEA. But as far as like what's really growing and expanding, definitely seeing a lot of expansion in the APAC region.
Yeah, and I think we cover very well on the first chapter the value that there is in having a global community, not only because you have your own in-house team and you can bring different experience based on the need that you have, the goal, the objective of the testing, but also there is that diversity element. So Jasmine, I'm understanding that you've been working with Buckcrowd for a while, so you kind of seen the growth of the mm-hmm. company. And how do you feel this expansion into a wider even geographic reach for the teams and the hacker community that come in together?
I think the main thing is that nowadays with bug bounty, we all not always, but like we often talk about it in the media. And it's always for good reasons. For example, I don't know, a company, they fixed a potential breach because of someone who found the bug with the bug bounty. And nowadays, like companies, like security is a really big thing for them. And without security, you get breached, you get on the news, you lose money. And no one wants that, right? So they launched more bug bounty programs. And the more companies that there are, the chances that we have people actually hacking them are pretty high. For example, if I work with, if I love company A and they launch a bug bounty program, then I'm probably going to go hack on them because, I mean, I want my own data to be secure, right? So I'll want to hack on that company. So I think this is like one of the reasons why it's growing so much in everywhere in the world.
And Grant, talk to us about the other side of the coin here and looking at the programs and companies from different regions as well. And it's not just US companies running on Buckcrowd that people from all over the world are helping to raise the posture of. It's companies all around the world looking to raise their security posture through the crowd.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you see organizations across the globe, right? We've got, obviously there's a high density of tech organizations within the United States, and specifically like the Bay Area sort of companies there. But again, we've seen expansion into pretty aggressive expansion into EMEA and some other regions as well. And I think what's more fascinating, or I know that we're talking specifically about geographies, but also the proliferation of these crowdsource concepts into adjacent industries, right? We're getting into automotive, we're getting into somebody's working on, you know, train hacking right now, like things that you wouldn't have thought before. And you know, we've done stuff with the military, with the DOD. You're seeing you know, compared to 5 years ago, I mean, and again, a lot of these organizations don't necessarily have borders, like, you know, where are the borders for, well, obviously they have centralized locations, but especially as you see like a decentralized workforce, you're seeing organizations in a number of industries, as well as a number of geographies, start embracing crowdsourced security. So that's sort of where I was going to go with that.
Yeah, that makes sense. So we can't really talk about geography without talking also about some other demographic. And we're probably going to dig into this on the next chapter. But today, I feel like when we want to connect the company that you guys work with the team that goes on and do the testing and the hacking, the bug crowd community, are you getting sometimes specific requests from companies to assemble a team that either speak a specific language or comes from a specific area because it's a company that maybe is not as global as it should be, or even if it is, they may have more of an issue in a specific area, geographic area, than another. Do you see that happening?
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely something that happens. I mean, there's a litany of reasons for it, right? So certain geographies may only have access to certain vehicles. For instance, if we're testing a bank and they need to be using production accounts or possibly an insurance provider, right? So you've got to be in the certain geography that they operate in, as well as potentially being a customer, right? So we end up with some niche things like that. We've also tested, a program with the Ukrainian government. I think they wrote a couple blogs about it. It was something as a function of a USAID project out there, but we had to have only Ukrainian hackers. And sometimes you need people with certain language skills, whether that's programming languages or actual spoken tongue languages. It just depends. I mean, but I think that shows the diversity of the crowd, right? That we're able to resource pretty much. I don't think there's really been any situations where we've been like, no, we can't find somebody to go do that. So, in short, yes, we see that. And yes, you know, the ubiquity of the crowd, allows us to help meet those needs and service those engagements.
And Jasmine, let's talk about the language a bit more, both in terms of spoken and written, and also coding languages, and perhaps even look at that through for the context of the target. So there may be, and we're far from having a nice mature environment where most things are secure, and we're looking for those hard to find nuggets, right? As soon as an organization comes on the platform, I'm sure they get hit with tons of findings cross-site scripting and some of the common ones are out there. So I'm wondering, when you look at targets, do you seek out organizations in other parts of the world outside of Canada and North America because the opportunities are greater, there are more findings to be found, or do you go for some of the more interesting ones where there is that train program running in this particular country, and I'm really interested in trains and those technologies?
Yeah, I typically actually do it because my main language is French, and there's not a lot of French programs. I mean, French Canadian and French from France or whatever. And usually when there are sites like they're only French, it kind of advantages me because not all the people actually speak French compared to English and people from that are from India. So in a way, I got an advantage compared to others. So I kind of look for those in one way, just because of that. And most of the time, I still look at sites from anywhere in the world. Like, it doesn't matter where they're from, as long as the site that they have that I want to look for bugs in, it's interesting for me. And this is like the main thing I actually look for when trying to pick a program.
There's one thing that I'm wondering, as you, Grant, you talk about people coming from this, let's say, new country. Of course, not talking historically and geographically, but
the new one.
But in the bug bounty, but the bug crowd program, and they may be more of an entry level, as I know that on the community, on the platform, you have three different kind of people that you, you know, categories of hackers that you have. What I'm curious to know is how is the community being interacting with all these new brain, let's say, coming in? Is it very welcoming in terms of, all right, the more the better? Is it a little bit of competition in within? I mean, is really embracing this globality? And maybe I want to hear from both of you, from the outside and the inside. Let's start with Grant.
Okay. I mean, as far as we're concerned, I think that the more people, the better. And that's not just because, you know, the more people in the crowd, the more we can deploy resources, but you get those different, you get those different schools of thought. And so even if somebody is relatively new, they can bring a fresh perspective to the conversation. So nobody's really written off in terms of trying to engage. And one thing I love about the hacking community is that everybody wants to help other people learn. We've employed a number of these creators or people that build content. You know, some of our own people have made tools for the community. They make videos. I've done classes as far as like how to get into web application security, right? The community security is great as far as being really welcoming to people that want to come in. So you would think there'd be some competition. But I don't think anybody's really trying to hold anybody back. Now, obviously, you have like trade secrets, right? If you've come up with like a secret way to you know, find vulnerabilities more quickly or in an automated fashion, right? You're going to keep that for yourself until it's, you know, somehow made public so that you can capitalize on that. But I think that the share of knowledge is pretty open and expansive. And again, that's one of my favorite things about this industry, and especially this community and operating this space, is that everybody's so engaged in helping other people learn and just sort of elevating each other at the same time. But again, would love to get Jasmine's input on this as well.
Yeah, because yeah, Jasmine, as you go, because cyber criminals certainly offer their own speciality, right? And then they come together as organized crime to really go after entities. And so I'm wondering, competition, hackers against hackers, but your view on kind of this point of coming together. Do you ever work as teams, and do you work with teams from around the world as well?
Yeah, most of the time I actually work in teams. For me, it's more fun. Like, it's always fun to collaborate with people, especially now when the pandemic, when we all need to stay home. So yeah, I work most of the time with teams. I have a couple of friends from like in my area. But I do also hack with other people from India, from the States. I hack with people from Australia, like pretty much anywhere in Europe as well. We all have different skills. So it's also nice to share, like Grant said, like hackers tend to share a lot of knowledge, and we all think differently. We all hack differently, and helping each other out, we learn a lot as well. So in the end, while we share with people, people will share back, so we'll just keep on learning some more. And now there's technology, like it always advances pretty fast. So even though there's a big increase of researchers, it doesn't. I mean, there is a bit more competition, but also with the increase of programs, I mean, it's pretty level. So I don't think it's not a bad thing that there are more researchers than in the past couple of years.
Well, it seems to me, Grant, this is for you, because I like to look at this again from the hacker community perspective and the business perspective. So the clients that come into the platform. So have you seen some sort of a pattern into there is more hackers coming from this particular region of the world, and there is also more customer, more company that wants to use your services? Or it's kind of like not really well level. So what's your take on that?
Yeah, I would say just transparently from the perspective of the businesses that are able to afford the service, right? Because on BugCrowd, there is a managed component, right? We provide the triage and validation and researcher management and other things, right? So there's a whole management aspect to it that we have to charge for. So companies that are able to, companies need to be fairly profitable, I guess, in terms of having a decent sized market cap and the willingness to spend that amount of money for the service. So generally, while there are more researchers coming out of the APAC region, that's not necessarily where we're seeing more organizations. I think this is really, I mean, again, from, I think where we're seeing the organizations, and again, that's just also a function of just where we focused on selling to also. But predominantly that's still focused in North America as well as EMEA. And we see the proliferation into other industries as opposed to geographies. So as it makes its way into those geographies, as it becomes a greater concept, I can see more organizations adopting it as well.
And Jasmine, to bring it into the mind of a hacker again, so researchers all over the world looking to find a program to hack on. The value of a platform that kind of consolidates and normalizes the engagement process, the disclosure process, versus somebody hacking a company in India that might have a unique set of laws versus Australia versus the States. So how do you view the platform in terms of helping you kind of avoid some of the challenges that might come from the laws and operations in different locales to really focus on what you do well, which is find those vulnerabilities?
Yeah, those platforms like Velcro, like it really makes our jobs, if you want to say, easier. If that didn't exist, I mean, we would probably still see people like get arrested for what they do, because I mean, hacking is illegal without authorization. But with Bug Bounty and Velcro specifically and other platforms, well, they make it legal so that we are authorized to find bugs. I mean, as long as we follow the rules, like there is still some rules in place, as long as we follow them, we won't get into trouble. And like hacking is in some way is like an art, from what people say, and like it's a way to kind of think and create some stuff and imagine some stuff and just be like creative. And so I mean, I don't think being creative is illegal. I mean, we just, you know, in a way we secure websites, we make the world and the internet a safer place in the end. So I think it's great that this exists, and I'm pretty fortunate to have that in place for me.
And out of curiosity, how do you pick your target? You don't have to give away your secret, of course, but is the geographic component part of it?
Yeah, it depends. Well, obviously, with experience, I tend to look at programs that pay the most because I value my time. But when I started out, I just picked any program. Doesn't matter if they paid or not. But in terms of really like choosing a program, I look at the amount they pay. I look at how fast they triage reports and pay out. This nowadays is really important because you don't want to wait 6 months and a year to get paid. We want to get paid as soon as possible. But in terms of like geography and the location of those programs, I tend to pick programs more. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say that I want to pick programs that are in North America. But in one way I do, because if I do like a full day of bug bounty during like say from 9 to 5, well, they also work 9 to 5. So the chances of them seeing my report is similar. While if I hack a program, let's say from Australia, I was like, well, the time is 12 hours. If I hack during the night, well, it's the day over there. So it doesn't really like, I mean, it would be harder for me to get, I mean, I don't know how to explain this, but like, my reports would be looked at while I'm sleeping. So yeah. I want to see like right away how they react, right, if they paid out right away. So yeah.
Yeah. It's making sense. It's like when we organize podcasts and we
exactly. Like,
how sleepy do I want to be? It's kind of a boring conversation. Exactly. So Grant, kind of leading from what Jasmine's describing for himself, I'm interested in your view across the crowd. In terms of part-time, full-time, when they hack, do they do it in local time or target time? And does where they live change their motivation? Are they more financially driven, or what's their goals? But two things there.
Okay, so the first half of that is sort of the programs they hack on and the times they hack and their motivation. I guess those are the pieces, right? Just want to make sure I'm breaking that down. Yeah. All right. So programs they hack on. I think that in general, obviously, you know, we just heard Jasmine's experience, and I think that a lot of researchers probably also want that sort of connection to the organization. But I think that there's a number of reasons, right? So you may hack on an organization because you're particularly well suited from a skill set perspective. You may understand that application, right? So say you're testing on some sort of application that you use yourself, or you've tested similar applications in the past, right? You've got that knowledge that is going to make you more effective. But then other researchers are just going to work primarily for the price point, right? So for some researchers, right, you're only going to work on things that are interesting to you from a technical standpoint, but perhaps say you've got to do reverse engineering, right? A researcher that's skilled in reverse engineering is only going to show up for reverse engineering projects, and they need those projects to pay good money. You can't pay web application rewards for a reverse engineering project or something like that. So those are some pieces. I think that on the whole, and again, I could be off with this, but you know, we definitely see researchers in emerging markets participate. In terms of time, they participate within their local time zones. Some, you know, obviously from like 8 to midnight, kind of, you know, normal people being awake hours. But if it serves them in their interest to participate, what you want to do when you're participating on a program. And sorry if I'm going into a little bit of a tangent. You'll possibly stay. For instance, you get invited to a program that launches at 1 p.m. Pacific. I think that roughly India is about 12 hours difference. So I'm just going to simplify it and say it's like 1 a.m. there when that program launches. You'll still see people online to start participating when that program comes online, because that's when you want to be the first person to submit bugs. So when do people submit? Typically, right, if you're just casually working on a program, you'll see people submit during a normal person's being awake hours. But if it's in your best interest to be first on that program, right, because the first submission gets rewarded, subsequent submissions don't get anything because they're duplicates, you're gonna do whatever it takes to be online at that time so that you're able to get out of the blocks. You don't want to start eight hours later, right? The guy next to you, he's more hungry. He woke up 8 hours earlier. He's been working on it and already picked up all the low hanging fruit, so on and so forth. So I know that kind of went in a lot of different tangents, right? But hopefully that provides a little bit of context there.
Yeah, it does. Jasmine, you want to add anything on that or?
Yes, just to add to what Grant just said, I think also people that work full-time and part-time, it makes a difference. Someone to wake up at 1 a.m. working full-time would have to wake up in the morning to go to work. Chances are that they're hacking on that program that night are pretty low compared to someone who's working full-time. I mean, not working full-time, but doing bug bounty full-time, so that they can afford in a way to wake up in the middle of the night, hack, and then just go back to bed in the morning. So that makes a difference also as well.
Right. So as we get towards the end of this, I'd like to kind of trickle this conversation a little bit on what will be coming up next time, Sean, which is going to be more on the social demographic and, you know, the difference that, of course, they're connected. I mean, we can't just take geography as one thing and
slice it off. A hard line there.
Yeah, it was actually not that easy to decide to talk just about this. So let's look at diversity in the form of the connection with the geography. So for example, as we see more people coming from the Pacific and Asia area and India and so forth, do we also see some change in the diverse group of people? And I'm referring to, you know, more female on the platform, more I don't know if you track this kind of thing, but more like diversity in general, because we know that's part of the success of the platform. So we can't, you know, not underline that is success of the industry in general and success of the team. And so any correlation with that, Grant?
We do track those sorts of things. I don't know if I can confidently say that there's any strong correlation in terms of diversity statistics, right? Diversity statistics in the larger sense tend to be geographic. It's not necessarily a secret that there is relatively low engagement from the female side, at least in this particular space. So we're definitely, that's something that we target and are trying to build out in terms of education, right? Making sure that people have the opportunity to learn and be engaged in those programs to sort of even the playing field and as well as giving opportunities. So, but in short, I don't think there's any real good statistics to dive into there. Sorry, I'm not able to provide anything useful.
No, mine was probably more of a wish than knowing if exactly you had some number. I mean, we obviously in the community we see and we welcome a lot of diversity. So eventually that's something that it will start showing up in the next few years. Jasmine, how about you? I mean, do you enjoy working with more diverse team? Do you feel like there is that concrete advantage in working with other people that think different than you?
Yeah, exactly. I really enjoy working with other people just because, like you said, we all think differently. And I think it all brainstorming together to bring ideas how to hack stuff is really fun. And like you guys said, we have seen an increase in female hackers, but I think there are a few out there who are active on Twitter. And I think with them helping out and showing that they're able to succeed and get into cybersecurity, it'll help girls and wanting to join cybersecurity. So I think they might be afraid to get in because there's so few girls in the industry. But I think with that happening on Twitter and on social media, it'll grow to make it more diverse. And also to add from the geography space, I've seen a few more hackers from Africa. And I think Africa is a place where there aren't many hackers as compared to other continents. And I think this is also good as well.
Yeah, I love that. And maybe that goes back to Grant's point earlier that you just need an internet connection and some type of computer, and doesn't have to be high powered, high speed. And perhaps we'll see more. I know we have folks in Africa have limited connection and limited speed and things like that, but hopefully they can leverage what they do have to become part of this more frequently.
I've actually seen people who started hacking on phone because they couldn't afford buying a laptop, and they found bugs, got bounties, and with those bounties, they bought themselves a laptop. So it's really cool stories.
Yeah, those are great, inspiring stories for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and the entry level for the profession, it's, you're just saying right
exactly.
Now, it's giving an opportunity to those people that have a passion that may not have the opportunity to go to get the program done, pay for qualification, pay for school, and just like, you know what, I'm just going to break stuff and see what's going on. So yeah. I
fantastic
totally
way
welcome
to demonstrate
them.
Oh, yeah. Critical thinking and passion and activity, definitely.
Yep.
So Grant, as we wrap here, I want to give you the final baton. And I'd like you to kind of describe the platform and running a program, because we've talked about a lot of moving parts here, right? So hackers from all over the place, companies from all over the place, different laws, different cultures, different levels of education and experience, all coming together. And it may sound easy that all just comes together on BugCrowd, but there's a lot that you do there to make those connections in the right way, to support the hackers, to give the organizations what they need, to help them scope, to help them triage. So can you give us an overview of the value of, or what BugCrowd does to help pull all that stuff together and the uniqueness of what you do there?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to go too granular. I know that I live in operations, so that's my propensity, right? This is my bread and butter. I launched hundreds, if not thousands, of crowdsourced security programs personally. So, but anyways, at a high level, what BugCrowd does is we have a conversation with the client to understand their needs, right, and what their expectations are. So do you need people of certain geographies, of certain backgrounds, right? Do they need to be background checked? Do they need to be ID verified? What are the specifications around the people that you need and the skill sets, right? So if you need somebody that can do GraphQL, let's make sure that we're finding you those right people. So making sure that we match their expectations in terms of reporting and delivery and all that. Obviously, there's the platform on top of it, and stop me if I'm going too sales pitchy, but if you try to run like a bounty program from your email or something like that, it would be terrible. You'd be tracking vulnerabilities over a spreadsheet or something like that. With our platform, you get all the vulnerabilities and all that information into the platform. It's very easy to digest, as well as send upstream to your integrations and whatnot. So anyways, moving on from that, we take that information about the program and we bring it to our group called Researcher Success. Researcher Success, so we have a whole team dedicated towards engaging with researchers, making sure we're building those relationships, finding the right researchers, and figuring out what we're going to need in the future as well in terms of engaging with those people and creating that sense of community. But there's also a separate branch that's in charge of finding and allocating the right researchers for the right program. So again, just continuing the GraphQL example, you need GraphQL researchers out of, EMEA or something like that, right? And maybe their background check, right? They have those parameters. We actually have a technology that takes all the vulnerability data and other data for researchers, and it gives researchers different scores, and so they can put that in and it'll make recommendations as far as the researchers. Now, obviously, they overlay their individual intelligence on top of that, and if they know somebody like Jasmine is really good at this, but maybe his score is not as high, they'll manually select him in. So there's an intelligent and human process backed by automation, blah 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 blah. And then we launch the program, and we manage and triage the vulnerabilities as they come in, so as to, take that burden off of the client, and sort of just make recommendations, right? That's the other role that we play, is like Sherpa to the client, mediator between the researchers and the client. Obviously, we prefer that they work together as much as possible. We always encourage that. But if there's a dispute, right, BugCrowd stands in the middle. And, we've even got a fund that we use when we call it the Make It Right Fund, where if something hasn't gone in the way that it probably should have, maybe a client's not paying as much for a vulnerability or there was a misunderstanding, we stand in there and we really try to advocate for the researchers. So there's a whole ecosystem back there. And obviously it's kind of like that duck on the water, the legs are just paddling furiously in the back end, but you just see a thing moving forward. So there's a lot going on, and I'm skipping about 100 parts in between. But I think that's sort of the capsule, right? And obviously it's onward and upward, right? So like as you run a bug bounty program, increasing rewards, increasing scope, increasing the number of researchers. There's a bunch of other levers in terms of gamification and so on and so forth, but I'll stop. I think that's more than a nutshell. That's like a goose egg full of,
I love this, and I'm a program manager at heart and an ops viewing person. So I'd love to spend an hour or two talking about all the inner workings. We can't do that now, but I think the legs below the duck says it all. I mean, you don't a legless duck wouldn't be very fun.
We'll be just floating wherever the current is going to bring us. So that will be not too much fun.
A jellyfish.
Yeah, I was a little scared when Sean opened this can, because I'm like, between Sean and Grant, they probably talked about operation forever. But I'm gonna end up this conversation actually with Jasmine and look back at the community. So I am very hopeful. I have no doubts actually that next year when we do this report again, if you guys are doing it now, you're committed. You have to see even more growth in terms of diversity and geography. And so Jasmine, if you have to make a, you know, a call for everybody to come together and join the platform and work all together for a more secure world, this is your spot right now.
Sure. I mean, like in 2021, well, after the year that we had in 2020, I think we all had a bad year. And until now, it's not going as good as we had hoped. So I think if we could at least do our part in making the world a better place to secure the internet, we all use the internet. I don't think the world would be what it is now without it. It's all part of our daily lives. So if we can at least make it secure so that our own information can be safe, I think that would be great for everybody's sake.
We are the internet. Interesting.
Yeah.
So, well, that's fabulous. A lot of good nuggets here. We touched on a few things from the report. There's a lot more in the report that I would encourage folks to have a look at. And there's a good transition into more of how and why hackers do what they do. We're going to get into that in the next episode. And then we're really going to dive deep in the final one with the psychographics. So two more great conversations coming. Grant and Jasmine, very thankful for you joining us for this one and sharing your insights and perspectives. And keep doing the good work, both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Cool. Yeah, thank you.
Yep, great conversation. And for everybody that is listening to the podcast or watching the webcast, there will be links to the reports and links to see the conversation we had before and the one that will be coming. So thank you
again. All the other goodness.
All the goodies.
All the goodies.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Thanks, guys.
If you enjoyed this podcast, share ITSP Magazine with your friends, family, and colleagues. Thank you for listening.